Initial treatment. A 51-year-old male stockbroker who had been treated by a cardiologist and bariatrician was referred to the Milmick-insured internist, whose practice took a holistic approach to medicine using nutritional supplements. When first seen by the internist in February 2007, the patient's medical history form indicated stress, hypertension, and headaches in 1988, for which he was hospitalized for 3 days and underwent an MRI of the brain, which was negative. The patient had been off medications and taking supplements for 3 years. His family history included his deceased mother and sibling having myotonic dystrophy and his living father having undergone coronary bypass. The patient was a divorced father of 2 adult children living with his girlfriend and her teenage children. During this initial visit, the patient complained of being off balance with lightheadedness and blurry vision. His blood pressure, which was controlled by diet, was 120 over 90. An EKG showed normal sinus rhythm, poor R-wave progression to V3-V6, and no ST-T wave changes. The insured felt the EKG findings could be indicative of a blood glucose abnormality due to gastrointestinal complaints of gas and bloating. A glucose tolerance test was negative, but the patient was advised to add acidophilus and avoid food with yeast or fermentation. Laboratory studies were obtained and reported to the patient 4 days later. A vertical autoprofile VAP test was used for cholesterol screening. The patient's LDL was elevated and his TSH was borderline. His glucose tolerance test result was very low, indicating that the patient was insulin resistant. He was advised to decrease sugar intake, dietary supplements were prescribed, and he was provided with a daily health guide. Follow-up examination. The patient was next seen in February 2008, at which time he had reported that 1 week earlier, he had become disoriented and had to sit down. He had also experienced chest pain that originated in his neck muscles and was associated by the internist with muscle spasms. At the time of this visit, the patient made no complaints of chest pain or shortness of breath, and his blood pressure was 108 over 70. An EKG demonstrated T-wave inversion of V4-V6, normal sinus rhythm, left atrial enlargement, and no R-wave progression. Labs revealed that the patient's cholesterol was 191, HDL 51, LDL 123, and his triglycerides were 62. The patient was advised that his CT scan, troponin, and cardiac enzymes were normal, and as such, an electron beam computerized tomography, EBCT test for coronary artery disease was recommended. The insured had a telephone conversation with the patient on February 29, 2008, and advised him to hold off on taking his thyroid supplement, increase his vitamin D to 800 units, repeat his labs, and have them rechecked again in 4 months. Our insured communicated with the patient via email in April, May, and August of 2008, and they had a telephone conversation on October 7, 2008, at which time the patient complained of stomach aches and requested a referral to a gastroenterologist. During this period, the insured did not see the patient and did not question why the patient had not had the recommended EBCT test or return to the office for follow-up. Patient hospitalized. On December 4, 2008, the patient was admitted to the hospital via the emergency room due to speech disturbance and altered mental status. He was aphasic, confused, had elevated cholesterol, and his EKG showed a left anterior fascicular block with abnormal ST-T waves. A day later, the patient was able to name objects and follow commands. On the following day, the patient's girlfriend requested a transfer to another hospital where the patient was seen by a neurologist who diagnosed middle communicating artery, MCA, syndrome with non-fluent expressive aphasia due to a cerebral vascular accident, CVA. An EKG showed regular sinus rhythm, and the findings of a cerebrovascular duplex scan included left internal carotid artery stenosis of 40 to 60%. On December 10, 2008, the patient was discharged to a rehabilitation center where he remained for 3 months. He underwent speech and physical therapy for CVA, expressive language disorder, and aphasia. The patient could read multi-page complex material and answer questions with 90% success. During his admission, he was aware that he had had a stroke, was now not able to speak, and had anomic aphasia, but he had no problems with auditory comprehension or reading. The patient's speech improved, but he had to think about words. He was noted to be functioning at an average level, whereas prior to the injury, he would have scored in a high average range. His processing speed was variable, and he had mild difficulty with basic attention and significant difficulty with arithmetic. The patient had some residual problems, but was functioning well cognitively. During this period, the patient's cardiologist advised him that the Milmick-insured internist had missed an extensive anteroseptal myocardial infarction that had occurred prior to the patient's initial visit. Subsequent MI and lawsuit filed. In April 2009, the patient underwent cardiac catheterization with stent placement due to a diagnosis of myocardial infarction. Despite rehabilitation, it was clear that the patient had plateaued, and as such, it would be argued that his functional level was permanent. Given language and communication problems that included hesitant speech, the patient felt unable to adequately function at work. He was ultimately deemed disabled. This case was reviewed by various Milmick consultants who found problems with the care provided by the internist, notably the failure to recognize changes in the EKG, the failure to diagnose an MI, the failure to refer the patient to a cardiologist, the failure to recognize that the patient had an embolic stroke, and the failure to follow up with the patient when he did not return to the office as requested. Outside expert reviews were also critical of the internist for his lack of follow-up and failure to refer the patient to a cardiologist. While Milmick's cardiology expert could defend most of the case, he found a departure from the standard of care in that the insured did not follow up with the patient as to why he did not have the EBCT that had been recommended. In addition, he found no proximate cause defense as he believed that the failure to treat the heart condition likely deprived the patient of a reasonable chance of avoiding a stroke. Milmick's neurology expert also could not defend the care provided as he noted the patient would have had a 20 to 25% decrease in the chance of having a CVA had the patient been diagnosed and given Plavix. As a result, it was recommended that this case be settled. The defense counsel provided an evaluation of this case that included a sustainable value of $4 million for pain and suffering and lost earnings of $1.3 million. The plaintiff was receiving long-term disability benefits as well as Social Security disability. The plaintiff's counsel made a settlement demand of $4 million. A consent to settle was sought from the internist, and despite his initial refusal to sign the consent, he eventually acquiesced. The case was settled prior to trial for $2,250,000. This amount included the insured's full primary professional liability insurance layer, as well as a portion of his excess insurance coverage. A legal and risk management analysis. The Milmick insured internist's inadequate medical assessment led to a misdiagnosis that contributed to life-altering and irreversible injuries for the patient. These injuries could have been avoided if the internist had referred the patient to the appropriate specialist for a more detailed, comprehensive workup. At the office visits, the internist failed to appreciate the patient's complaints of being off balance, with lightheadedness and blurry vision, being disoriented, and experiencing chest pains that originated in his neck muscles and were associated with muscle spasms. The failure to appreciate these complaints revealed that the physician lacked specialized knowledge in this area of medicine, and the patient should have been referred to the appropriate specialist. The standard of care for referring patients requires a physician to refer when any other reasonable physician with similar qualifications would refer a patient to another physician because he or she does not have the specialized knowledge to treat that patient. This duty protects patients from inadequate treatment and protects doctors from being held liable for providing care beyond the scope of their qualifications. Also, the internist failed to appreciate the patient's significant family medical genetic history, which included myotonic dystrophy and cardiac issues. The fact that the patient provided positive pertinent responses about his family's medical history and had similar symptomology himself indicated that further evaluation by a specialist should have been considered. Obtaining an accurate family health history from a patient is an effective tool for all physicians and other healthcare providers, as it provides for a more comprehensive approach to the overall care and treatment of the patient. Family history plays a critical role in assessing the risk of inherited medical conditions and single gene disorders. It can identify people with a higher than usual chance of having common disorders and can also provide information about the risk of rare diseases and conditions. During treatment, the internist recommended that the patient undergo an EBCT and have a retest in 4 months. The patient failed to follow this medical advice. Although there was non-compliance on the part of the patient, it was still the internist's responsibility to follow up with him. The patient's failure to get a recommended test with no follow-up put his health in jeopardy and made the treating provider a potential target in malpractice litigation. The internist had direct communication with the patient on 4 separate occasions during a 5-month span regarding complaints of abdominal pain, but during these communications, he made no attempt to reinforce the importance of the required test. The internist also failed to discuss the need for follow-up or attempt to schedule an appointment when the patient was in his office, despite the patient's continued additional physical complaints. The internist was required to discuss the importance of compliance with recommended testing, the benefits of the test, and the risks involved in not adhering to the proposed treatment plan. The internist also needed to remind the patient that timely follow-up is vital for ensuring proper future care. These combined failures resulted in the large settlement that was awarded in this case.